Hey folks, welcome back to The Snake's Paw. I'm Andrew. Bit of background for the episode you're about to listen to or watch. If you're on YouTube, we've got video on this one. So, as you may know, Jack, our friend and co-host, is the author of a series of books called Tales from the Gas Station. And those books started as a series of posts on a Reddit forum called No Sleep. In those Reddit posts, Jack was not fleshing out a plan for a four-volume book series. He was making up a story as he went, riffing on comments from readers with no destination in mind. It was only after doing that for a while, putting down the story in little pieces and seeing how things landed with people, that he decided he had the stuff of a first draft and he polished it into a book. So it's a great origin story, but there's an unusual consequence that comes with starting out that way, which is the internet is forever, and those first drafts are still out there to be found and read. Well, fast forward to the present, and recently a show called Creepcast dug up those old first drafts. Creepcast is a couple of friends, not unlike the vibe here at Snake's Paw, who read and react to horror stories that have been posted online. And Creepcast has quite the audience. So when they decided to do a Tales from the Gas Station episode, reading and reacting to those original stories, Jack very quickly found out about it. He also told me and Mafo about it, and we all gave the Creepcast episode a listen and got together to talk about it. And that is this episode. We're going to get into how Jack's stories got started, what he was trying to do back then, and what it's like to wake up and find out your world has been opened to a lot more people. What else do we discuss? Raccoons, the nervous systems of horror fans, the art history of reaction videos. It's all here, starting now.
So did you guys see that video that I told y'all about? The Creepcast reaction video?
I'm sure it's called The Creepcast.
That's pretty weird, right?
Can you... I'm sorry to always show up leading with ignorance, Jack, but can you explain to me what... Was that a reaction video? Because I've never seen a reaction video before. Does that fit the genre of reaction videos?
So... Yes, I guess. And Mafo, do you ever watch reaction videos? Do you have like a better take on this than me? Because
no. Well, generally, when I think of reaction videos, I think of people reacting to a video. Whereas the Creepcast thing was them reading your story and kind of reacting to it as they went along, which is a little bit more substantive, I guess, than your typical reaction video, because it's a bit more than just people reacting to it. You also get the story along with it, and almost like a mystery science theater type thing where there's like a little bit of commentary while you're actually getting to see the thing.
So that begs the question, is mystery science theater kind of like a prototypical reaction video?
Yes it is. Absolutely. I didn't need to think for more than half a second about that. Totally.
Can you guys, I originally pitched this idea as, what if the three of us actually streamed the Creepcast video, all 3 hours of it, and we watched it, and then we recorded our reaction to that, and I think that would have absolutely been a reaction video.
Yes, it might have also been overkill.
Yeah, the fact that their video is 3 hours, and the fact that we would have had to have like paused and like added our own reactions would have necessitated all of us sitting in one place a little bit longer than any of our lives will allow us to. Especially,
you are a merciful god, Jack. Thank you.
We're not just in different time zones. We're in different hemispheres right now.
Yeah. So,
did you call me a merciful god?
I did.
Thank you.
Are you mad? Are you going to throw a lightning bolt at me for that?
It wasn't the merciful part that I was like, wait. I am merciful, obviously.
Yeah, it would be a bit odd to do a reaction, like a straight reaction video to it, because a good portion of the video, 60% or so, is just your story, which we are already intimately familiar with.
Which, and
know,
like,
maybe one day we will do a reaction to something we created.
Like, whoa, Tales from the
Gas
Station.
The whole time I was listening to it, I was cringing, like, oh, right. Why did the author do that?
Like, that's what I wanted to ask you, is, okay, so like, you have, all right, in the timeline of your history with this universe, you have gone from writing a series of short pieces on Reddit, which is what they read, to turning the first of those series into a book, to writing three more books. And now you are like, you have, and various things besides. So at this point, like, these people are in 2024, these lovely gentlemen are picking up the earliest iteration of this thing that you have spent so much time with since. And I was spending the whole time imagining, how does Jack feel about this? Can you answer that for me?
Oh my God. It was so horrible. okay. A lot of creators will look at their earliest things, the things that they were like first became famous for, like Quentin Tarantino can point at Reservoir Dogs and be like, yeah, right then I was at my peak and I stayed there. This was not the case for me. As you very well know, you helped me rewrite my book. You were there for the editing process.
Fond memory.
Yeah, that was so long ago. I feel like they were reviewing the worst version of the universe.
It's like if there's the actor's nightmare where you're on stage and you know your lines, this is a little bit like the writer's nightmare, that like your first draft is the only thing that anybody knows about, and you're held accountable
it's horrible.
For that. Which, all things considered, I mean, one, you are somebody who, I want to ask you more about kind of what your way through writing this stuff was, but like, as I was listening to it again and better understanding all these years later the way that you come at it all, I'm like, Jack knows his tropes so well that he's able to set up a really like tight feeling set of references that play off of each other really fast. Like, it's very tightly constructed for something that you were making up as you went. And that's part of what I was thinking. And then at the same time, I was also like, these guys are having a blast for the most part. So it holds up.
They were having a blast up until a certain point.
Yeah, which we can get to. But like, kudos where it's due. You gave them a good, solid like round of entertainment. And I will say, like, their disappointment was, among other things, to do with, they were very attached to a lab theory about what the big mystery was.
So oh man,
when that's hard to them, prevent. But
when I was listening to them theorize where they thought it was going, and I was like, ha ha, they're gonna be surprised. And then they were surprised, and they're like, we hate this. And I was like, maybe there's like a limit to where you can subvert expectations. In my defense, I did not write this for them, and I did not write this for any person 9 years in the future. There were things that I was really poking fun at that were popular on Reddit at the time.
Okay.
And the fact that like they glossed over the fact that there was an entire chapter missing. Like, back in the day when I first wrote that missing chapter, we had a lot of fun with that. There was a whole lot of people in the comments who were talking about like what was in the missing chapter. And
yeah,
I mean,
well, that's one of the really interesting things for me listening to it this time, because it's the first time we revisited the like original Reddit posts in years, quite some time.
Many years, since the
books have been published, I assume. And one of the interesting things was I noticed that like there's a lot less dialogue in the Reddit version than there was. It was much more a blog post than it was, I want to say conventional, but you know, your typical like storytelling. And so like that struck me, but one of the other things I liked about it, and that you kind of lose inevitably when you turn it into a book, is the like interactive blog post Reddit nature of the thing.
Yeah,
where you can do like the missing chapter and stuff like that and kind of play around with the form of that a bit. It was really nice to revisit kind of that aspect of it, which isn't so much a part of the books.
Which, like, and it's very clever. You get a tiny bit in the reading because you're having this thing that was a series of blog posts on Reddit with commenters being read by people who have an online platform with commenters. So whenever Jack is getting packages from a commenter, and the note that he gets is kind of making fun of your stereotypical internet commenter who's like endlessly redundant, those guys are like, oh, this constantly. Yeah, this is what we see all the time. That was the one place where like that like internet interactivity kind of came back in, besides the whole Peanut Gallery character of the whole thing.
Yeah, there were so many moments where I felt like I was in a room with two people, and it's like the three of us were having a conversation, but those two wouldn't let me get a word in. And when they were talking about that, I wanted to yell at my computer, like, that exact character. I'm sure the person is not around anymore, so I can go ahead and say it. That was an actual email I got while I was writing it from someone.
Oh, that's fun.
Word for word, he wrote that, hey, don't take offense. I think it's really good. I think it could be better, blah, blah, blah. And after I got that, I took it, copied it, and put it in the next chapter. You know, the semi-autobiographical aspect of Jack working at the gas station getting these letters.
And then you have the commenter saying, I didn't know you'd use my note in the next installment.
Yes, did that happen literally too? He wrote me back, said, I didn't know you would use my letter. Copied, pasted in the next one. Yeah.
So the reason
why that felt like commenters and stuff is because that was a real one. And
that's great.
But yeah, there were other places too when I saw them miss a joke and I just wanted to like scratch my eyes out. And they're like, they just glossed over something that was supposed to be funny. And like, I was like, wait, go back. You delivered it wrong. Well, right now what I'm thinking about is the way they misinterpreted, wasn't a joke.
The Jerry thing.
The twist about Jerry being, that was once again me poking fun at a common trope in No Sleep Stories at the time.
Okay.
Was, oh, my consciousness bifurcated into another person and that person wasn't real this whole time. It was just me. And then of course, like he walks in and they're like, oh no, it's Jerry. You just got his name wrong.
Got it.
And then Isaiah was like, I'm not ready to let go of this twist. I choose to think it's real. And then,
which, like, to be fair, you are, while you're doing it, like, you are so good at the references thing that you're pulling references from so many different directions. And this has always been one of the, like, editorial roles that I've played with you is, like, I'm the person who doesn't get the reference. You can make a reference to Scooby-Doo, and I'll get that because I watched TV. The last time I watched TV was, like, 20 years ago. And
wow.
You can make references to like horror movies that I've heard about, and I'm exaggerating, but like I am always the person who doesn't get the references, and I enjoy your writing anyway, but I didn't know any of those things. And so especially when you are making references to like specific movies and genres and so on alongside like, oh, and there are references to the very specific stuff going on in a particular internet ecosystem at a particular time. It's beautiful, but it also just shows how like ephemeral and fragile that stuff is.
Yeah.
There were a few other places too, where like I wrote not even jokes, just references to see if a large group of people could come together and crack something. Like at one point they're reading the Wi-Fi names of things in the area.
I was going to ask you about that. Yes. Yes.
Yeah,
what
they
did it tried. Mean?
They came so close, but yes, there's a Wi-Fi that like you can decode and see tall guy. And there's some other puzzles in there that I'm not going to give away if the internet wants to try and crack it. And they're like, well, TA11 looks like tall. I'm sure it's gibberish. And they just moved on. And I was like, if you had said that in a comment section and 100 other people had worked that out, you could have figured it out.
Well, and it makes me think of like these are very referential towards the No Sleep forum that you were doing this on, but the most like site specific thing you've ever done on the internet probably was Bedside Manor, which was a puzzle
Absolutely.
To be solved on site. And like the character of the blog post, like there are things hidden in URLs, like you have to find this hyperlinked letter in one word, like stuff like that. And it has a comment section where people are solving it on the spot. I mean, that into a published novella, so it can be done.
We should explain in case anyone has only read the novella and they're confused. Bedside Manor,
yeah.
One of my side stories that spun off into a novella that takes place in the universe of the gas station, did not begin as a novella. It was written at peak COVID lockdown time, and it was meant to be an interactive experience, sort of like an ARG. And yeah, I put puzzles and codes, and the only way you could continue reading the story is if you deciphered the puzzles and cracked the passwords. And the only way you could do that, unless you were just a certifiable genius, was if you worked together with, dozens of other people who were trying to crack it on the blog or in the forum. And one of my favorite and least favorite moments was one of the puzzles, it was password protected, and you had to do something kind of complicated that I was proud of, that I worked on for a while, to get the password. Or enough people in the forum just started typing words until they brute forced it. Yeah, and I was lurking in those forums too. I was reading the whole time, oh, just silently
That's
judging,
the being, the, yes.
being the omniscient DM. And I was very proud of them.
It was great.
Proud and disappointed.
I was lurking too. It was so much fun to like read people's progress and to read people's reactions. And it was like, it was a choose your own adventure story in a way. And it was this, it, but like every page was hidden somewhere else. I had a great time with that. You did such a good job there.
Yeah.
Thank you. Maybe I should do that again sometime.
I mean, I think anytime you decide, there is a crowd of eager people waiting. Evidence has proven.
If the audience, if the people watching this want to see me do another one of those, get in the comments. Tickle the YouTube algorithm and let
yes.
me know.
Leave
the
a
more comments
request
you
in
make.
Code.
Yes.
Make a coded response, and not only will Jack know you are willing, Jack will know you are ready. So one of the things that I really enjoyed about listening to the Creepcast episode is I feel like the fellow who does the majority of the narration, he mentioned being, and I think both of these guys were probably Southerners ultimately, but that guy mentioned being from East Tennessee. And I feel like one of the things that works for the gas station stories, whatever setting they've been in, book form, blog post form, whatever, is they are a really like insightful point of view on rural life, like people, like what it's like to live in a small town. And I feel like narration guy, his Southern accent came out more and more and more as the stories went on. Because it really does. Like, there's so many movies that are sort of an L.A. fantasy of what small town like life must be like, which is generally very cartoonish and sometimes in intentional ways. But this is like real rural life, rural life with a layer of fantasy on top of it in a way that I think people who have spent time in small towns or grown up in small towns really get. And by listening to his voice slowly wrap around it more and more, both of their voices to some extent, I was like, oh yeah, this is one of the things that it does that's kind of unusual in the world of like very well-known stories. Because people who write very well-known stories are just in big cities for the most part.
Yeah.
And I know there's a lot of small town stories that paint this rosy picture of like, it's the annual pie festival.
Absolutely. Yes.
Everyone knows everyone's name and they like each other. And like having lived in multiple small towns, that has not been my experience.
Yeah. Even the nice ones. It's just kind of, there's
yeah,
the line I remember most. Absolutely. In one of your books, there is a moment of this, like, Jack is trying to deliver this kind of unsettling dystopian energy to somebody, and the person who is, I want to say, new in town is coming in being like, what? Everything seemed normal to me. Just people mowing their lawns. And he was like, that's exactly
it.
People here don't mow. And it was just, it got so much encapsulated into one, because you're right. People don't mow. People don't mow in that town.
No, not anymore, they don't.
God damn it.
And speaking of the Creepcast format, I wasn't familiar at all with the podcast before we watched the video. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting on a few levels. For one thing, kind of their back and forth where one does the narration, one does the dialogue. It works pretty smoothly, given that they're reading it just kind of off the cuff. And so I thought that was kind of nice. And they managed to do like a couple sound effects and background music and so on. And then on top of that, one of the things that was really interesting, especially in regards to like hearing them read a story by Jack, by someone I know, and a story that I've been familiar with for a long time. As a writer, unless you're someone puts on a play of something you do, or you've written a screenplay or something like that, you don't really get the live experience of having someone react to your book as or story or what have you as they're experiencing it. And
yeah,
I found that like it wasn't even my story in this case, but it was like really gratifying to just like hear like jokes land and things like that. And you said, of course, it was also frustrating that they missed certain things. I mean, that's an inevitable part of it as well. But I just thought, God, like, and then this doesn't apply to anyone but you, but it's got to be interesting to hear like a live audience for one of your books. And
it's very weird.
It reminded me of the closest I've ever come to something like that was when, after I finished like maybe the first draft of Her Changing Face, I sent it to Helen, who does the voice for Mombot and Frank Quitely and many of the characters in our in this next ball. And she was doing, she was just texting me as she was reading like comments and commentary about it. And it's nice. It's, there's something about that that is really sort of gratifying, because generally you only hear what people think after the fact, like once they've had time to digest it, and it's, there's not as much spontaneity to it.
Yeah. They have time to distill their thoughts. And also if it's someone, maybe not in the case of you asking someone for a review or for their notes, but in a case for me, an audience member probably isn't just going to come to me and tell me all of their thoughts in a very like clinical assessment. People will either come to me to insult me, or they'll come to me to tell me the parts that they like, and they'll leave out the other parts. And this was the most honest kind of review, and that was having not asked for it was especially like stressful. And I know that I had the option to just not listen to it, but I didn't know this podcast existed, and I had only a passing familiarity with Meat Canyon from his cartoons. But apparently a lot of our audience has some overlap. So I suddenly woke up to a barrage of messages and notifications and mentions on the subreddit, like everyone talking about the same thing. And usually that only happens when there's like a disaster or an emergency. But they're all like, Creepcast did Tales from the Gas Station. So I was like, well, I guess I should see what this is about and see what the lingering effects will be. And oh man, I started playing it and I did not stop it until it was all over.
Oh my God, just on the spot. And
on the spot, yeah. Like I woke up, rolled out of bed, saw all these messages, and was like, oh, okay, let's go see. Jesus, they have how many million views? And I'm someone who is very scared of attention. And so far, I've been able to lead my life in such a way that I can funnel the attention productively or into good things. But then, like, suddenly it's like, well, I have to make a reaction post on my blog. And I realized I hadn't posted anything on my blog in a month and a half. And suddenly you get that, like, lockup where it's like, what am I going to say? I'm just going to apologize to everyone who's coming here for the first time that my blog is full of bots.
I mean, that's very in character. So,
yeah.
I feel like every time I come to your house, you apologize to me for all the bots.
Yep. Just can't do anything about them.
There's just Roombas everywhere. No, I mean, that's got to have been surreal. And it's crazy. Like, horror is, at some level, kind of a niche world. But obviously, it's big enough of a niche that there are big players in it that you can be a big player in it without knowing about the other big players. And there's something about like horror people, and I'm not a big horror person myself, but I so enjoy being around them because they just take so much glee in things that to other people mean something very different from glee. Like hearing these guys go through and at the points in your story that are, and you're not doing like heavy full on horror. You're doing references to horror by and large, but you have moments that you do accomplish these very clean sort of, little surprise gotcha moments, a la like, well, that can't be Kiefer because I killed Kiefer a few days ago and he's in my trunk. Like that is a pretty well done horror moment if you were to transpose it directly into a straight faced horror story. But this guy, when he reads that, he just giggles. And that's really fun to see. Yeah. Is that like the things that might make someone go, oh, if they're like new to it, when someone is an appreciator of the craft and they're very familiar with it and they've rewired themselves in that way, it just makes you go, yeah. So it made me think about how well comedy and horror marry together, because once you have done horror for a while, it becomes, I don't know if necessarily funny, but it becomes wired more to, I guess, the sense of wonder than or surprise, maybe, in comedy. You know, a comedy lives in surprise world.
Yeah, yeah. And that's something that's that I've had that conversation plenty of times. How, yeah, like, horror and comedy are the same thing.
Yeah.
It's just all about how you react to the unexpected. Yeah.
Ah or ha, which one are you doing? Yeah, so it was to hear them call your story cute, which was a word they used. And one could see that as belittling, but I imagine just like people who have been around horror long enough, it becomes comforting. It becomes the stuff you want to put in shadow boxes. You imagine like cute old people who grew up on horror movies, and they just like they want their little horror memorabilia in like well-arranged things on doilies in their houses. They're very much like, it reminded me how comforting your stuff is to a lot of people.
Real quick, I just want to comment on the fact that anytime the raccoons were even mentioned, he would just immediately, Isaiah would immediately start laughing. I appreciated the,
listening
how into the
to
raccoons
him talk
he was.
About like, I felt like the way he hated raccoons' existence, like, on the surface is like, well, then you don't like the story, but like a little bit underneath that, it's like, well, you identify with the story because the raccoons are horrible.
Nope.
Yeah. Like, yes, the raccoons in this story are the raccoons that you know exist.
And you know who hates raccoons is people in the country who deal with raccoons all the time. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, my one generation older than me, like, that was raccoons and beavers. They just hate them for some reason.
Man,
with a passion.
That's fun. That's one of the slight differences between the geography of your upbringing and ours, because for people listening, Mafo and I are from the same hometown. We met Jack later on. We did not have beavers in our hometown.
I did have a pet raccoon, though.
A lot of raccoons. A lot of raccoons.
Many Christmases around my childhood were centered around opening your presents, taking whatever weapons you got for Christmas morning, going down to the closest beaver hole and shooting beavers. I did not partake at any point. I like beavers, but that's just a memory that, like, for the longest time, I thought that was normal. I thought everybody did that on Christmas.
But that's how they knew you were a weird kid from the beginning. The boy ain't right.
The annual beaver slaughter.
He's not the shooting the Tannerite we put on the beaver hole.
The annual beaver slaughter.
Beaver slaughter / pie baking contest.
We don't take kindly to that here in Beaver Slaughter.
Beaver Slaughter. Beaver Slaughter, USA.
That's right. Listen, young man, you're in Beaver Slaughter, Mississippi. There's a way we do things here.
Yeah.
And it's pretty self-evident. We slaughter beavers.
It's entirely too plausible. There is literally a town named Slaughter near where we grew up.
Mm-hmm. It's true. It's true.
I know some people named Slaughter.
Yep.
It's a German last name. Can't spell slaughter without laughter is what they usually say. I didn't make it up. I don't take responsibility for that joke.
We want to get into the some of the particulars about their commentary.
The downhill is
the downhill
awaiting us. We can go wee down that hill anytime you want.
Before we get to the moment where, like, you could tell at least one of them was suddenly so over it, were there any other noteworthy moments that jumped out to you guys?
I guess, okay, I just want to, maybe this is not the time, in which case we can come back to this, but it makes me want, knowing that this was something that you did so long ago, and you've commented on the experience of looking back on it, but I, like, it strikes me to ask you again, like, remind me kind of where in life you were when you were doing this. Like, what was the place that writing these things occupied? And particularly, given how much they're looking for, like, tie-ins and references to what's to come, how much were you making these stories up as you went versus like planning things ahead? Because lifestyle is different for a casual writer versus a full-time writer.
Yeah, the part that they read was the earliest iteration of the series, and it's not actually the story that blew up and won the No Sleep Story of the Year. That was a version, though, I guess, a sequel to what they read. This version, I wrote it over the span of a week or two. I don't think any of it was anything but a first draft. I was not planning stuff out. In fact, the kefir reveal, the fact that the hand plants were kefir, I tied that together after I'd already introduced both concepts, where I was just like, man, I need to explain some stuff. Well, what can kind of explain each other?
It always blows my mind that you're able to do this. Cause again, like, you know, your genres and you know, your kind of choreography of a story so well that you are able to like, leave a blank over here, leave a blank over here, and just find a way to tie things together later on. I just can't. Like, I gotta figure the whole thing out in advance if I'm gonna leave a trail of breadcrumbs. And you are able to just leave a trail of breadcrumbs and be like, we'll figure out where it goes. I am always stunned.
Well, I mean, if you look at at what came next, if you look at the novel and realize all the things that have been changed, the reason why is because some of the things did not make sense down the line.
You can only get so much mileage out of the figure it out as you go approach. There's a level of craft you have to get beyond to do more. But how much you're able to do on that has always blown my mind. I'll put it that way.
Thank you. Each thing that they were reading, I thought when I wrote each chapter that would be the last thing I wrote for that story.
Really?
When I finally finished it off and put a bow on it, I was very proud of the ending. And I thought, this is going to be a great ending. And maybe one day I'll return to this universe. Probably not, though.
And when we say earlier, like, that there was a certain point at which, for them, as in their reading experience, they were kind of done with it, was the last big reveal, the sort of quote unquote big bad of that first arc was, that explained not all, but a lot of the things that had gone on. Like, when did you know that? Were you figuring that out, like, right as you had them walk down the hallway? Or did you have a rough picture in your head a time earlier?
I had a rough picture in my head when I first started writing it. It wasn't even a thought. It was, every story like this has the big bad that you have to, like, build up, and it's invading your dreams, and it's scary, and it's an Eldritch horror that you can't even fathom how horrible it is. And that was just, that's every story has that.
Yeah.
So I was just doing, I was, you know, connecting the dots. And I think I came up with that, I don't know, probably around the same time I came up with the Benjamin Monster Hunter character. I think the two of them came with a little bit of symmetry. Mm. When I introduced Benjamin, the Monster Hunter, it was with the idea that he would be the prototypical badass monster hunter that was pervading a lot of No Sleep stories at the time.
Yeah.
And he would always be wrong about everything. Those are the rules in my brain. So he's saying that there's this ancient evil under the gas station. I immediately was like, and in order for him to continue being wrong, whatever's under the gas station is going to have to be the opposite of evil. So I did not expect them to give notes. You know, 9 years later on the internet, where they're like, here's what I would have done differently.
I mean, everybody is a Monday morning quarterback to some extent, as the commenters providing feedback on the Creepcast format are proof of. So we're all guilty of it. We all loathe it when it happens to us, and then we do it.
Yeah, I've criticized enough things that I guess I can't be too upset about getting my own stuff criticized. I'm very, very appreciative of the fact that they passively plugged my books at the beginning of the thing. It would have been great if they'd done like
an iota of research.
I mean, I guess not what I was going to say.
Part of the point of this is that they go in blind. And so everything's kind of a surprise. And they did clarify at the end that there were four books. So,
and as we've learned with The Snake's Paw, most people don't watch an entire video. Most people drop out somewhere in the middle. So for people who dropped out somewhere in the middle, it was nothing but praise from beginning to end.
Hey.
There you go.
Yeah. So anyone who's listening to this video right now, you're the lucky few who continue watching a video to the end.
That's right. Yeah. We promise there's an Easter egg right around the end somewhere. We'll figure out what it is when we get there.
And I will say, I think that the reveal of the Dark God for me actually works better in the book version. In the book, there's like a lot more buildup of the Dark God and having influence over people's minds and them speaking about the Dark God or their Dark God maybe speaking through them. And so the kind of the bathos being undercut by the Dark God just being kind of goofy and well-meaning is, I think, a bit more effective in the book just because there's so much kind of like building and so serious. And all the, in the book at least, all the text is like, you know, capitalized and bold and it's clearly like a deep voice.
Yeah.
So
it's also very interesting hearing them do their voices for the characters, yeah. Not just the Dark God, but they're doing their version of Jack. And
Jack sounds like
Jerry.
Such a badass. I know. And then Jerry.
Oh, man. When Jack was on the phone with the woman complaining about the half pig, Hunter came at it like so aggressively. Like, what do you mean? I'm telling you, there's half a pig in here. Like, very seriously. The way you might actually call to complain about half a pig.
Yeah.
And I was just over there like, no.
And it is the uniqueness of Jack, and it takes a little while to wrap one's head fully around it. Although, again, I mean, in as much as the job of a second draft is to make it look like you knew what you were doing all along, you make this clearer in the books. Like, the whole thing with Jack is your stories are basically cosmic horror, and where in like straight cosmic horror, people look at the horrific things and go insane. In yours, the guy like knows not to look straight at the thing. And when he looks kind of near the thing, he's like, yeah, there's something over there. So the blasé-ness of it, they eventually picked up on that. They got there, yeah. But it is such a signature of this particular series.
Yeah, just eternally nonplussed and having to do his job. It's one of my favorite things about the book is the job is always there.
Yeah.
And like the details of the job are always like talked about. And like the things having to repair this and all that, there's something I don't know. So there's something I really like about that. It kind of grounds it.
Yeah, I feel like the grandest compliment that I ever heard you get for the gas station books was that there's something like generational about that. Like for people who have grown up in a world that's just been in like constant meltdown for their entire lives, that somebody who is just like looking at it and being like, yeah. It's pretty messed up. I need to restock the drink case. That is so relatable.
Which I take that as a huge compliment.
Yeah, you got to relate to somebody. And that's a very, that's a big group of people to relate to.
The format of their podcast, too, is interesting. Again, I didn't know anything about them. The impression I got from this is what they're doing right now is a lot like what we did when we developed the Snake's Paw. It's a couple of guys who have a creative career going, and they wanted to just do something that was fun. I went back and watched the intro to their first episode, and yeah, Isaiah seemed like really pumped. Like, I got my buddy on the phone, and we're going to read some old classic creepypastas. And I think that's great. I love doing that. I would recommend if they continue doing this, maybe they should like make sure that they have permission from the creators. I am of the opinion that what they do is transformative, at least in the context of what they did with mine, and I'm fine with that. But as I'm sure you guys are probably tired of hearing me say,
I'm sure you're tired of having to say it.
We were talking about this yesterday, just maybe a week and a half ago. There was someone on YouTube who literally took the fourth book in my catalog, and they put it through an AI bot and had an AI bot reading my book on YouTube. No commentary, nothing transformative, just literally stealing.
And stealing, I mean, we could poorly probably... is like stealing just badly.
Right.
Just the laziest form of stealing.
Seriously, and the lowest quality result too. Yeah. Like AI narrators aren't that good. I mean, a lot of meat narrators aren't that good either, I guess. But so maybe it would have been an improvement over them reading it themselves.
Did you just refer to humans as meat narrators?
I guess I did. I guess we're stuck with that.
I love that. So one thing that's kind of interesting that this does relate to is with my familiarity with Meat Canyon, one of the reasons I know who he is and what he is. And this is a long story that I'm going to almost certainly get the details wrong. And if that's the case, and if people out there know the actual details, please correct me in the comments. Meat Canyon kind of jumped on a controversy train a while back. Not something he did, but there was a professional streamer named XQC, a human name apparently, who his whole deal was he got famous for being a jerk, is what I understand. Again, correct me if I'm wrong. And then he parlayed his fame into streaming videos and doing reaction videos where his reactions were completely minimal. And it came to a head when he was like streaming movies and he would just get up and leave the room. So people watching his stream would just be watching the movie and there was no reaction to it. And he would argue, and like, I'm sure lawyers got involved. And, Meat Canyon is a cartoonist. He has another channel where he does some amazing, gross, cerebral cartoons.
I've seen a handful of them.
The most amazing exaggerations. And he did a cartoon of XQC as like this creepy golem creature standing like perched on his computer chair watching a video. And then XQC did a reaction video of that cartoon, where he said nothing, just watched it and kind of like every now and then was like, hey. And then Meat Canyon did a reaction video to that reaction video where he's in the corner perfectly still and silent while all of this is just an increasingly smaller and smaller window thing.
All right, you're finally selling me on reaction videos. If it can be as meta as that, I am intrigued. Yeah, I don't want to watch it,
like,
but I'm glad it exists.
Mirrors reflecting into mirrors endlessly. Mm-hmm.
I think
it's the abyss.
The message I got from him doing that was that there is a fine line there between what is transformative and what is reactionary and what actually constitutes stealing and not stealing.
Yeah. For sure. And like, it is really ambiguous stuff that's on the internet. Like, not that ignorance is necessarily an excuse, but that there is a lot of presumption of public domain with stuff that is posted onto forums, and that is, at least it kind of has the forgivability of being kind of a common space of misunderstanding, and that if someone puts their own twist onto it, well, they're doing so maybe in good faith, and they're putting forth effort to just like show yourself being in the presence of a work that somebody else did. Has neither the reflection nor the burned calories that option A did.
I will say, though, that if they wanted to do some more Tales from the Gas Station stuff, I'm on board. I'd be happy to coordinate a story that they can read.
I love a project with friends. So like you said, the premise is really lovely. And they are obviously having a hell of a good time.
I think for this particular one that it might have been a little bit too silly and quippy for what one of them was expecting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and if that is the case, it just gets sillier and quippier. So
yeah.
Prepare yourselves.
And I haven't seen any of their other episodes, so I have no real point of reference, but it does seem like they have a bit of a, like, each embodies a certain role, where Isaiah is just the spontaneous, kind of optimistic, like,
can I just say
diving into it role,
think,
and then
we're both,
Hunter is like the surly, more like cynical one.
Can I just say it?
Yeah.
So Hunter is Jack and Isaiah is Jerry.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
And Isaiah went from I think actually when Jerry first came up, Hunter was like, I hate this guy. And Jerry, within like 3 minutes, was like, I love this guy. So you're not far off.
Yeah, it tracks.
It's funny also, I mean, in these, we get to see the development of Jerry, who like is a lot of people's main character.
That was one of the weird things
books.
For me, was seeing how little Jerry says in the,
yeah,
like, his personality is so much more diminished in like the original version. Like you flesh out his character so yeah. much more in
he was all the books, but even the first book. Like when I first introduced him as just like, oh, he's a cultist who won't leave the gas station. I was like, because I need someone to kill at some point later, and it can't be one of the main characters. So let's just put a body there in storage so that when I need a monster to kill someone, and then he grew on me. And that is why he was there in the first place. Had that not been the original plan, I would not have named him a character that starts with a J, because now he's one of the core characters and everyone's like Jack and Jerry. And it's just hard to say. But
I think it's lovely to say. I think that works great. Just like
it's easier to say than Marlboro, which was another thing that when I first started writing, I did not expect narrators to be reading it. Had I known that, I would have picked a name that was easier to pronounce. Or maybe I wouldn't.
Camels.
Have, I
call him Red.
I did. Camel. One kind of running joke in American the series spirits. Is that Jack uses a lot of fancy French words. And the reason that is because Mr. Creepypasta, who narrates the audiobooks and narrated a lot of the original things, at one point had a hard time pronouncing a French word. And I thought that was the funniest thing. So I just started putting it in there like Tableau Vivant, Portanteur. Yeah, just to see him struggle.
And you can do like so much of this is not like a common vocabulary word, but it's a thing all three of us love. A big piece of the comedic vocabulary in the gas station books is what we call bathos, which is like mm-hmm. a plunge from dignity, like broken expectations to some extent. But I think the best moment of bathos in the stories that were read in this one, for those who that's the reference point, is when whoever it is who down in the hole underground is like, quick, the gun. And Jack pulls out the gun and throws it at Spencer, which is so very, it's Chekhov's gun, but like you're saying, screw you, Chekhov, I'm going to do it my own way. And that bathos is so much the essence of like what I think the group of us like to do. And French is so good for bathos. You can be like, the terroir on that 40 ounce beer was so, you know, pithy. And
that just 40 ounce beer that you're drinking from a little tiny teacup.
That story could use some craft, but you
I
get the idea.
I thought for sure that
French
you were
is so dignified.
I thought for sure you were going to go with the story with the little glowing caterpillar.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think of that as like, bathos. I think that's great. Like inverted. It is kind of pathetic. It's got the whole high flown feelings, but hey, pathos, pathetic, bathos, pathetic. It works. You're pathetic.
You're pathetic.
But yeah, that's a great example pathetic. Too. That's a great example too. That one, that's a darker example. I feel like there's,
yeah, that one's got a harsh edge more like, because it's so optimistic yeah. and like fuzzy warm feeling. And it's just like, it just shit all over it immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's bathos that's doing something that's got a bit, yeah, some pessimism in it. But it is. It totally is. You're right.
Although even that ends up going, you know, better than you think it will.
It's true.
I mean,
it's true.
Spoilers, but yeah. That's not the last you see of that caterpillar.
In a sense.
That's right. That that raccoon, I think that raccoon is permanently tattooed on some people's bodies. At the very least,
yes,
is permanently tattooed on some merch.
Have Rita the raccoon tattooed on themselves, and I've seen them, and I think that's amazing.
Incredible.
Also very like puts a little bit of like not pressure, but makes me think like, oh man, what if I write something that sucks and that person who got the tattoo is like, oh, this just ruined the entire story from me, and now I have to get this tattoo removed.
I mean, it is a temptation to turn Rita into a time capsule and be like, we're not going to do anything else with that character because it represents something to people, and we need to put that significance in a jar. I could understand making that decision, but I'm sorry, Jack, you got to keep writing.
If I have to. This is probably a good time to mention, I don't know if when people are going to see this, but I did actually channel some of my instant reactions to Creepcast into a story.
Oh, so, yeah?
Yeah, I took some of their notes, actually. I took the things that they really wish I had done, and I also took a few of the things they wish that I hadn't done, and I cobbled it all together in this delicious potage, and I poured it out, and right now it's on my Ko-fi page. I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but it's called The Abandoned Zoo Story.
Oh my god!
And, okay. I have to check it out.
In keeping with the Meat Canyon motif,
potage.
An alternate title of it is. Is it just me, or is there something strange about these meat golems?
Okay, so we're back to the internet playground, and right. Everything is a reference to a reference to a reference.
That right there, that's the kind of reaction we need, is writing a whole new story based on someone reading and reacting to your story. That's the kind of productive energy you're looking for. Absolutely.
You're right. What are we even doing talking about it? We should all be... Well, we are actually... We're literally filming this. We're going to make an episode out of it. That's what we're doing with it.
That's right. Making content.
Yeah. Well, overall, it was fun, even if it was nerve-wracking to watch.
Yeah, we didn't have the nerve-wracking part. So that is a more... Maybe a less rocky road for us.
It's brought a lot of new faces your way, it seems like, and really maybe has. Brought some new faces over this way, in which case, hi.
Hi, Creepcast friends. Pardon the bots.
Pardon the bots.
Ugh. All right, y'all. I think this is how much time I have before I got to go do real work. So
yeah. I think it's about as much time as Matt ahead of y'all, has before so, bedtime. So
yeah, I need to go to dreamland.
Go to the dreamland.
Really I don't know why I said it like that.
Here's where you just smash cut to the credits.
Look, there is a strong pull towards whimsy on these things, so I don't blame you.
All right. Love you guys.
Love you too.
Later.
We'll talk soon.
Yeah.
All right. Good night.
Good night. Cool.